memory reference architecture for that hardware, for the software that's going to run on top of it. So it's a pretty straightforward game. So it's very cool because now I can think of things such as I could run 400 copies of Windows 10 on a 2U chassis. And that's a user with, you know, 4 gigs of memory. So that kind of user density is incredible. You can just, as you need more user capacity, you just slide in more chassis. It's very easy to extend your infrastructure out or the software infrastructure out to support the user load. It's usually always all flash for VDI. We don't need this idea of fast storage, slow storage, because you got to look at one thing is that your servers are not going to have, usually, unless it's a high performance server doing something very specialized, a lot of your servers are not churning out a lot of IOPS to the disk. They're doing stuff, but it's not like a virtual desktop. When a virtual desktop is being used, it is far more active by a factor of like, you know, 4 roughly, you know. So you're going to see a lot more IOPS, and that's why traditional server class, server virtualization, the storage is often too slow for VDI in some cases. I had customers roll out VDI with high expectations, and then they realize they're hugely expensive. I know I'm picking on EMC. It could be NetApp or somebody, but their existing filer wasn't built for that kind of workload. And so they're trying to do all this IOPS, and it can't do it. And that's why you need something like all flash, because the IO patterns from a virtual desktop are completely scattered, and they're more active than a traditional server. So the final piece, of course, is it's quick to set up and deploy. You know, there's only a handful of network ports that plug into your infrastructure, and pretty much almost everything is inside the box, and the software that comes to support the hyperconverged appliance is just designed to basically quickly spin up your base functionality with the device. So it's incredibly fast and simple to get these things deployed. Now, I did want to take a step sideways because Blade PCs never really took off, but they still haven't died either. So I bring it, if you're wanting to do the concept of a Blade PC with VDI, you can do it with these things like these HP Moonshot chassis. Basically, what was it? It's something like 42 or 48 cartridges or Blade PCs are basically thrown in that machine. And it gives you the ability. So typically what these are sold for is for web server farms, but you can do it for VDI as, 45 nodes, there we go. I almost never see these, well, I haven't seen them in real life, but I know they're out there and I thought it was worth talking about. The reason people want Blade PC is predictable performance. If I give the user a Blade, it's basically a physical PC and you get predictable performance. And if I want, I can opt out of using a hypervisor. It could just be basically a PC running on a little Blade inside a large chassis in your data center. So this hasn't completely died, but I just don't see a lot of it. Now, cloud is the interesting part of all this because I think this is where a lot of this is going, and I think it's to everybody's advantage because cloud, I think, will eventually make the world an easier place. So Microsoft Azure has a lot of options today. And this isn't even everything you can run on Azure. This was just a high level of some of the major things, like Microsoft has remote desktop services support, so you can load up an Azure Resource Manager template, input some values, and you can instantly deploy your Azure remote desktop services infrastructure, you know, in minutes rather than building server by server. There's support for Zenap, Citrix Zenap, and Zen Desktop on Azure. So you can run the full infrastructure on top of Azure. Things are moving to the way of PaaS. So PaaS is sort of where you don't have to take care of the infrastructure as much and you worry more about administrating the things that matter. And so Zen Desktop and Zen App Express are sort of ways of getting there where you don't have to do as much management of the, or care and feeding of the infrastructure. I know WorkSpot is here, and they seem a little bit further down the road that way with the way they're doing things. So they're here. You can give them a look as well. But the idea is with cloud, eventually people will be tooling their products. So you won't have to worry about, are my NetScalers patched? Are my VMs patched? You know, am I using the right security configuration? This should eventually start to go away where it's just, I need X amount of capacity. This is what I want to buy. So this is where we're trying to go with putting things on Azure. But for the most part, if you move your infrastructure to Azure, you're not worrying so much about the physical hardware, the backup infrastructure. You can even get virtual machines with GPU support if you want to do high-end applications for CAD or even artist work, that kind of thing. And some people are even using GPUs in another context for rendering creative work in the cloud. So there's a lot of ecosystem there and options, and it allows you to manage less, but as we eventually get to the world of PaaS, there will be even less to worry about, which I think is awesome. And then you have additional services like Azure multi-factor authentication is a great thing. Like, it is so incredibly easy to set up Azure multi-factor authentication, and you don't need those RSA tokens. You know, you can have it text people's cell phones or call them, and it integrates with, you know, remote desktop services, or you can get it integrated with your NetScaler appliance. So there's things you can do there as value adds that are easy to spin up. And then even some software vendors got into the game, like Unidesk actually worked with Microsoft to make their application layering technology work with Azure. Res has an appliance that works in that's in the Azure marketplace as well. So you don't have to focus as much about setting these technologies up as going into the portal and just firing up the technologies that you want. Now, AWS is kind of interesting because it has different flavors of stuff. Every cloud is always a little bit different. AWS kind of started with their own workspaces, which is kind of weird because it's actually Windows Server running in single user mode. And you might be wondering why they did this, and this was to get around some of the Microsoft VDA licensing. So if you've ever had to deal with that licensing, this is how they get around it. And it works fine. It uses PC over IP connectivity. It's maybe, I don't know if it'd be considered an enterprise offering, but it's still something you could consider using. You can fire up Microsoft Remote Desktop Services. You can fire up Citrix. There is virtual machine support with GPUs on there. So there is an ecosystem. I didn't have a chance to really find too much there. I know there's a NetScaler appliance, but there is an ecosystem on AWS. Now, for some people, they might prefer VMware on AWS, which is... VMware and Amazon have been working together lately to make a partnership to provide cloud services. And I think VMware sort of built a desktop as a service offering with IBM's cloud. And I'm not saying it was bad, but it just didn't really fit into their product line as good as this does, because AWS has more data center presence than IBM. That's one thing. The other thing is that with this combination between Amazon and VMware, you're running ESXi servers. Believe it or not, AWS runs Xen servers, their hypervisor. So you get actual ESXi for this, as well as you get to use your same VMware management tools for both the on-premises and the cloud VDI environments. So now you get that single management plane in case you have multiple virtual desktop environments. Citrix offers something similar for Azure, but as you can see, this is where, you know, the big boys are getting is one management plane for all the different VDI implementations you have. And of course, there's, you know, the NetScaler appliance, but more importantly, there's some other stuff, like you have the support for different types of network virtualization, or I shouldn't say different types, just the NSG, and vSAN is all built into there as well. So it's very much about leveraging your existing VMware investments into the cloud and not really having as much of a learning curve. So I'm going to step into desktop composition a little bit, because the layer cake is something you either love or hate, and it's about managing your workspace. So at the hardware layer, we have things like the hypervisor at the operating system, obviously the operating system applications and data and settings. And the thing is they're all tied together, making it very hard to manage. And we're using different technologies to try and pull this stuff apart. So at the hardware layer, you know, we're using hypervisors to abstract the hardware from the operating system. We're using application virtualization to separate applications from the operating system so they can easily be managed. Data and settings is kind of a fuzzy one, because some stuff is pure data, some stuff is more application settings that should be moved with the application. So your application management kind of dips into data and settings a little bit. So the reason this is important is just understanding what these components are and what you should be thinking of. So for your hypervisors, ESXi is probably the most common one you'll see out there from VMware. You do have Xen Server, and AWS is actually a big user of it. Some people for their VDI environments will use Xen Server. I'm kind of fond of Hyper-V, just because it's simple and easy. KVM is out there. I don't really see it with VDI. And Nutanix has one as well. The thing I want to drive home with hypervisors is I don't think this whole thing that we only run one hypervisor makes as much sense anymore. It's like saying we only run Windows Server or we only run Linux. It's like, no, you should really pick the best tool for the job. And especially if you're looking at 3D graphics acceleration, you really should be looking at what your solution works best with, rather than trying to be like, okay, well, we use VMware, therefore we're going to make everything work with VMware. Well, it may or may not work with whatever you're using to do your 3D acceleration. So if you like your hypervisors crashing, then you'll go and try and push the curve a bit. But if you like stability, which most people do, you should probably pick a hypervisor that works best with your virtual desktop environment. And sometimes you save some money too in the process. Image management, this really depends on how you want to go about it. The reason I brought it up is everybody's got different ways of doing it. But usually what they're doing is different permutations of, here's my master image, and I'll somehow maintain a Delta disk. And the reason we do that is to quickly boot up a machine, and then, you know, we store changes that are needed ad hoc to give that personalization feeling. That gives you the greatest reduction in storage when it comes to running your VDI environment. So I think it's very important that you move away from virtual machines with dedicated persistent disk, and you start looking at other technologies that vendors have out there to actually manage the image, to perform the image management. So, for example, I could get down to my entire VDI environment potentially having only one master image, and then all the permutations are built out using other technologies. And that's where I sort of get into the application management. We know traditional application installers suck for VDI because they take forever, and you don't have time to do that. Application virtualization, like Microsoft Application Virtualization and ThinApp, are great for isolating bad applications, but ThinApp isn't so bad for provisioning applications, but Microsoft Application Virtualization is like legacy applications. It's slower to install. Application virtualization, I think, has better application compatibility because application virtualization doesn't work with everything. But the reality is that we needed to do something better. And this is where I saw Citrix and VMware get into different technologies. So Unidesk used to be a sponsor of MVP Days, and now they got bought by Citrix. And AppVolumes is, I forget who owned it, but they got bought up by VMware. And the whole idea is that they use virtual hard disks to store your application information. And basically, these virtual hard disks are either attached at boot time, or in some cases, depending on the application, they can actually be added while the machine is running. And this allows you to get a more dynamic build of that machine as it's needed. Because what we're ultimately getting to with all these technologies is we're building a virtual machine that is stateless, i.e., nothing. When the user logs out, the machine gets destroyed. But we're saving just enough information so that when the user comes back into the environment, the machine is reconstructed. And why is this important? Especially in the cloud, you want to have as much of an elastic experience as possible. So if only 10 users are logged in at night, I only want to be billed for 10 users. If 1,000 users are logged in during the day, I only want to be billed for the compute that they're using up. Because if you do your calculations on cloud consumption, most of your bill comes from compute, not storage. So you want to be able to have an elastic environment, and that's why I really promote the layer cake, because we're trying to deconstruct this so that we can give the user the persistent experience they want, but give IT the non-persistent behavior. So other things we have to do is we also have to play with the user data and user environment management, which can be a difficult area. Folder redirection used to be a way we typically approached it. We would take your My Documents folder and redirect it to a network share. Worked great, but then some CTP/MVPs started doing some more troubleshooting, and they realized redirecting app data is actually a horrible idea for application performance. So Microsoft and other vendors have things that act like user profile disks, like app volumes and Unidesk even have similar type capabilities. And basically all I'm doing is I'm mounting a virtual hard disk as the user profile, and that gives me a fast log on, but it's not like roaming user profiles where it does this big copy action when I log in and log off. Instead, it just attaches the VHD User logs in, they do their work, and then when they log out, the VHD is unattached, and we end a day. Is corruption gone? No, it still technically can happen, but it's nowhere near as bad as roaming profiles. And I'll tell you for a fact that roaming profiles is basically end of life in terms of development. Microsoft wants to give it a funeral, but they haven't picked a date. The funeral's coming, just wait for it. So then Microsoft put together a Microsoft User Environment Virtualization, or UEV. And at first I laughed at this product because it was so simple. I'm like, oh, this is such a piece of junk, because I'd been familiar with things like AppSense, WorkRes, and Imedio. And then I started realizing, after working with these technologies, most people just need this. All user environment virtualization does is it copies some registry settings, maybe some files that personalize your application and move it between machines. And it could be between virtual machines, or it could be between your virtual machine and your physical machine. So you could have your office settings follow you wherever you go. You know, you could sync them up to Office 365, your OneDrive, and just have it follow you wherever you want to go. And the thing I realized is not every application needs personalization. Because people, when they buy these user environment products, are like, okay, as part of our packaging process, we're going to make sure we capture user settings for every application. And it's like, no, do some investigation, because most users probably don't care. Office is one they probably care about. Internet Explorer is probably another one. Majority of their business apps, probably not. I learned in the oil and gas industry that certain engineers will lose their minds if their settings get reset on certain engineering apps. So those you might care about, but you got to learn what apps need it. Because doing it across the board is dangerous. Because this adds a whole new layer of troubleshooting. And help desk usually goes, I don't know, not my problem. Tier 3, deal with it. So this is why I say you have to approach it with a bit of caution. The other thing is that AppSense, Res, and Imedio are better at managing settings because they sort of have a change history and all that. But they're also group policy on steroids. And when you look at them, you're like, oh my God, the things we could do with these products. It's amazing. But I'll tell you, AppSense and Res cost a pretty penny. And they're also fun to troubleshoot depending on how complicated your policies are. I've actually done a few migrations where I've taken them off of AppSense and put them on UEV, because they've kind of had buyer's remorse. They're like, AppSense is awesome, but we don't need it. And so I strongly caution you that when you go down this road, if you're going to buy something more than UEV, make sure that you actually understand what your requirements are and why you're actually buying it. So, what's the point of this presentation? So, application requirements are always going to drive suitability for the cloud. That's going to be your biggest takeaway. It's going to be latency to the backend servers, operating system support. Not every operating system supported in the cloud. The software vendor might not like you putting it in the cloud. And one point I should have added, which is a big one, is some applications have this thing called a hardware licensing key. And that can be an immediate no-go for putting your application in the cloud. So you got to look out for these things, because they can put a big red X on moving the app. If you're a large enterprise, you're likely going to see VDI from new sources. That's going to be moving your own applications into the cloud. I even see some software vendors cloudifying their applications. What do they mean by that? Here's this RDP link. There's your application. And it's a legitimate strategy. Some vendors are saying, this is how we're going to cloudify your application. Your mobility strategy plays into it. A lot of people don't allow VPN. So how do we give you the applications from home? Oh, here's our VDI environment. Now, how can we make it cheaper? Well, maybe we start moving it into the cloud. Operating system migration is coming up. And it's not so much that things won't work on Windows 10. I'm seeing, depending on the industry, some vendors are just not ready to get on board with Windows 10 yet. It's like we've done all our functionality testing. Functionality testing says the app should work on Windows 10. Call up the vendor. No, we're not ready. We won't support you. Okay, well, end of story. We got to find a different way of hosting the app, and VDI might be a way to do it. Now, smaller environments, I actually have some smaller customers that want to do away with their on-premises VDI environment. Some of them are looking at it as a strategy for just having the mobile office experience. And the big thing around this is there's not a lot of capital investment, that you don't have to actually go and buy all this hardware and hope you use it. It scales up and down depending on your staffing needs. So maybe you bring in a bunch of contractors. Maybe it's easier for you to give them just a bunch of VDI instances and say, okay, you can use your contractor work PC, but if you want to work in our environment, you go to this VDI environment and we'll give you all the apps and services you need through there. So, you know, there's different ways things are coming in to different environments, but this isn't really, just limited to a big or a small organization. I think VDI is just going to be more pervasive because in one way it's more affordable. Yeah? Really depends on the technology you're using.
Can you just repeat the question?
Oh, sorry. How small is too small of an environment? Sorry, for our listeners. So too small, it'll depend on the technology. So if you're like using Citrix XenApp Express, you're looking at at least about 100 to 150 users, which isn't really technically small. It's still kind of up there. Microsoft Remote App was a great idea, Azure Remote App, that scaled down nicely to like 20, 30 users. It depends on who you go with. I don't think Horizon goes that small. I'd have to do some calculations to double check my numbers with Microsoft Remote App on Azure, but it's probably going to come in at around 50, 60 users to make sense. The thing is with people, I don't know, maybe WorkSpot, you guys have a lower, because of your architecture, you can come in at a lower number than that.
Yeah, you should come and see my talk right after your talk downstairs.
Yeah, so see the WorkSpot talk. Because they're more focused on, WorkSpot guys are more focused on cloud-optimized architecture. And so I think vendors will be chasing that to go smaller. So,
give an example of a law firm. We put them up in the cloud instantly. 25 users or lawyers are using it. Right? So we've got WorkSpot Cloud Control Plane, Azure as the infrastructure, and up they go.
Yeah, they already got people as low as 25 users. So I think for those people that are in the smaller range, it's coming. If those numbers are still too high, it's going to be coming where you could, like even Amazon, you can sign up for one user if you want. But these prices are coming down and the minimum commit is definitely coming down. So infrastructure, I kind of mentioned this earlier, just try to not view your hardware and hypervisors as being the same as the rest of your organization. So try to make sure that you specifically tailor it to your VDI environment to get best value. Operating systems, just really saying Windows 10 is more optimized for VDI than Windows 7, less disk activity. However, Windows Server 2016 has less user density than 2012, 15% less. Look at doing optimized image delivery, though you could still use MDT to build your master images if you like a nice structured process. Application virtualization or application management, I'm a big fan of layering. I think layering is where things are going for dynamically composing the virtual machine. You may still need application virtualization for some of your problematic applications, especially on a terminal server type environment. And yeah, with user and data management, just make sure you evaluate your needs. You don't need something that's too complicated and too expensive. I have a friend who put in an AppSense environment for a utility company. He can't get himself out of there because they need him to fix all their AppSense tickets because nobody else seems to want to learn how to troubleshoot that. Yep, job security. There you go. Be an AppSense expert. It's a great product, but it creates its own complexities. Whee! So, questions? No?
So, that user profile disk, so you need special file server, right?
Nope, user profile disks.
Can you put it in the actual worker or the
actual? Actually, I've set up the actual as a share on the same directory.
Yeah, like ideally, it's a file server with SMB3. Yeah, so user profile disks with Windows, the one that's built into Windows, it's just group policies. Yeah. Yeah, but it's definitely worth playing with, like, way better than roaming user profiles.
Way better. When you log in with the username that to the same server, it will give you that user profile disk.
Yeah, ideally, you're going to put those user profile disks on a central server, and then regardless of which host they're hitting, they get access to it. And yeah, it's pretty straightforward, actually. Oh, really?
I did it. It's
really
well.
Nice.
Is it user profile disk is like only per farm, or it can be shared between farms?
Shared per farms.
Yeah.
As long as you set up your VDIs correctly and point to the same folder, when a user logs in, it'll pull that same virtual disk. Just don't make the mistake I made. I was building my VDIs for all my users. Some of our software works, I have to install it per bloody user. So I log in on the VM straight into it and created the user and then when the user every time tried to log in for home using a remote desktop application, temporary profile constantly. And it'd be a 50-50 chance. It's because it was trying to create the virtual disk host virtual disk or use the one that I've created locally. So if you don't go through the proper steps and go through the remote gateway, the remote host code, the remote gateway, it doesn't create the virtual disk host properly. And that bit me so hard to. And it was the one person that I did this for, and it was happened to be the grand poobah.
Yeah. So it's got to affect somebody important.
Yeah, who was in Phoenix at the time? His computer. So suffice to say, I had 24 hours of overtime that weekend.
Nice. Cool. Okay, well, thanks for everybody showing up. Yay.
Awesome.